Hey there, hi there, ho there, hello there, and welcome back to another exciting edition of the Cardinal Couple Radio Hour podcast, where we bring you the joy and excitement of view of our women's athletics as we get into the spring of things. Using a pun there, as the softball team as well as our lacrosse team are either in late season or near late season form, with lacrosse tournaments coming up and stuff. The teams are rolling into their own. We'll take a look at both of them, how their fortunes are going. Also, it's always basketball season around here, but with the women's squad, some things developing there as some players are coming in as far as freshmen joining the club, and also some transfers are eyeing the cards with interest. So we'll take a look at that. I think Jared's going to do some research on that for me and hopefully have me some answers by the time we roll around to it. And I'll chip in what I can too. But anytime you can get the daughters of two NBA stars, you're not doing too bad for yourself, are you? You're really not doing too bad for yourself. Let's just hope that they can somewhere carry close to the game that their parents did. That would be sweet. Especially Zach Randolph, good lord, what a player he was. But we got a crew of three in here with you today, in case he's down on the river. It used to be Case would get down there like at 6 a.m. in years past. I think he's kind of delayed and tempered his arrival time as of late. But yeah, his dad was one of the first ones down there when they would let them line up and put their blankets down. With the prime viewing site right by the bridge, his dad was right there. So he'll be doing that. I'm not sure what Daryl was up into today. Never really saw. I guess she's got stuff going on. A busy girl with you know, getting married and the bats and everything else. So life goes on with her. But we do have Jared in the house, Jeff in the house, and myself, Paulie, here in the house for you today to bring you the show. And I guess we'll go ahead and start with Jared, who's already been at work this morning. Can you believe that? Jared, what's going on, man?
Thankfully, work this morning was from home, and it was really only for about an hour and a half. Your standard deploy stuff and updates, and sometimes you draw the short straw and have to log in and test some of that to make sure things work right before agents and others start calling, hey, what's going on? So thankfully, for the most part, things are going well. Still recovering from spring football game last night and lacrosse the day before. But had beautiful weather for both of those events. Can't complain. I know it's going to be a little chilly for the folks at Thunder, so hopefully they all have their blankets and jackets with them today.
Yeah, it was the mid-50s earlier this morning, the last time I looked, probably right around there, still in Louisville. But it is sunny. So at least that's a little bit, and
yeah,
I can remember,
a lot.
Yeah. Cooler thunder mornings of the past when I used to go down there every year. Yeah, but you were always so busy setting up the grills and the volleyball nets and cleaning up the warehouse and everything else. Like, we used to host a big to-do down there in the early days of Thunder, and always had a great time, and was still finding beer cans later in, even in June, that people had stashed around our warehouse. I moved a case of boxes and there was a six pack of beer. I thought, there is a God. Look at this. But so Jeff is with us as well. Jeff has been busy this morning too, doing stuff. And you don't get down the Thunder, but you were talking about maybe trying to go to another event today down there, Jeff.
Well, it's kind of a Thunder event. The Racing Louisville has a game today at Lynn Family Stadium, and it's kind of a big Thunder event. It's kind of like the Bats have traditionally done, but they're not at home this year. For I guess the first time ever was what Jared was saying, since Slugger Field was built. But Racing does have a game down there at Lynn Family Stadium. It's, you know, right down on the waterfront. So I was toying with trying to get down there. Maybe, and I don't know. I'm undecided.
Well, that's rough to parking down there at Adams and Clay in that area. They want Thunder Day. Woof.
Well, it's rough parking for racing in general, but yeah, on Thunder Day, I can imagine it's going to be even worse. So,
and as for myself, just kind of hanging out and doing some things, had a little bit of a kind of a malady hit me earlier in the week and was out for a couple weeks with some ticker problems, but they did a medication check and stuff on me and found out that there's some stuff that I was still taking that I don't need to be taking. And once you find that out, it's good because then you can stop taking it.
And yeah, so it's nice to be able to reduce medication.
Yeah, that's what I did. I mean, it's like I was with my family practitioner and she was like, so you're still on this and you're still on that? And I'm like, well, that's what they prescribed me out of the hospital. She goes, when did you get out of the hospital? I told her, you need to be off both of these, like tomorrow, okay? Stop them. Oh, okay. Well, why did they give me refills on them? That I can't answer you, Paul, but don't take those anymore. And so, and I feel better, so that's good. But we got a lot of fun stuff to go through today with Case down on the river. I think we're going to lean to Jared then for our scheduling and Twitter information. So, hopefully you've got that pulled up and you're ready to rock us.
Certainly. We'll hit Twitter real quick. Daryl, who's not on air with us today, Daryl Faust 4, that's number 4. Case, who is also not on air with us, as he's downtown enjoying Thunder of Louisville, tweets out the best case scenario. No E in the word best due to a Twitter character limit. Paulie tweets out his card of a couple. Jeff has card couple radio and Jeff McAdams. And I've got Mr. Anderson Jared. And then there's plenty going on today and throughout the week. As we've already mentioned, it is Thunder of Louisville here in town. Kicks off a two-week party, pretty much, that leads up to the Kentucky Derby first Saturday in May, so plenty of events these next couple weeks. Highly encourage you to go out and check any of those out if you want. But in terms of U of L sports, our track and field team is just down the road, down I-64 at the Jim Green Invitational at UK. That's wrapping up today. Should be done by this afternoon. Women's golf is currently down in the ACC Championships. Theirs is at Wilmington, North Carolina. Men's golf is also in their ACC Championships. Theirs is in Charlotte, North Carolina. Rowing is at the Southern Intercollegiate Rowing Association Regatta in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. That's going to be a two-day event, so it starts today. We'll wrap up tomorrow morning. Softball, who did get a win last night at North Carolina, had a small schedule change. They're now going to play a doubleheader against the Tar Heels today. First game's at 2. The second one should be approximately 4:30. Both of those are ACC Network Extra, so live stream only. Baseball, who got a win as well last night, will continue their series at Miami tonight at 8 o'clock. Let's see if schedule can let me look at everything here. Moving ahead to tomorrow. Rowing is continuing at the Southern Intercollegiate Rowing Association Regatta. Women's golf, men's golf will continue their stints in the ACC Championships. Lacrosse is now into postseason play as well. They'll play in the first round of the ACC Tournament. This one is at Virginia Tech, a noon start. This one, they don't have a stream or TV listed. I assume it's going to be ACC Network Extra as of right now, but we'll play by ear. And baseball will wrap up their series against Miami at 2 o'clock. Monday, not much happening other than men's golf is wrapping up their ACC championship events. Tuesday, baseball's back on campus for a 6 o'clock game against Western Kentucky. We're going to give everybody off Wednesday and Thursday. Not much happening there. Next Friday's busy again. Track and field is going to be split up. Part of the group will be out in Stanford, California, probably pretty sunny and nice this time of the year. The Peyton Jordan Invitational will begin that Friday. The rest of the track and field team will be here in town at the Clarkwood Invitational. We are to the outdoor portion of their season, so you can head out to Cardinal Park free admission. Their event's going to run from Friday through Saturday, so definitely go check that out. Rowing will make their way to Raleigh, North Carolina for the Lake Wheeler Invitational Friday and Saturday event. And then softball and baseball, coincidentally, both host Clemson this or next weekend. The one we want to look at is going to be softball. Their Friday game is going to be at 6 p.m. It looks like they're going to do a decades theme this coming weekend. It's going to be the 70s is the theme for Friday night. So if you got any 70s gear, or if you need some, just go into Polly's closet, pull something out.
Come raid my cedar closet. There's all you want up there.
So softball's needing some much-needed wins, and we will get to see the return of Taylor Roby next weekend. No, she's not playing for Clemson. She's one of their graduate assistant coaches, but it'll be nice to see her with the back at Ulmer Stadium for the first time this season. And we are through scheduling.
Yeah, fantastic. And then I was kind of wondering why we didn't nail on to Taylor Roby there, but never mind. Certainly with a good program down there, you can't turn that down at all. Good program in Clemson. And I was looking at these brackets here, and this is what it reads from the ACC site, Jared. It says, all 9 games of the tournament will be televised on ACC Network.
Oh, perfect. UofL did not list what that was going to be, so I'm glad to see it will be ACC Network.
But the next sentence reads, and they will also be available on ACC Network Extra.
Right. So
that's always the case.
TV linear games also have the online streaming option as well.
Yeah.
Good. That's good. I wonder who will get to call the early ones. I wonder if our Louisville crew will get a chance to call us up at Virginia Tech. My guess is probably no. They'll probably use some local announcers. Yeah, up in
there. I think they'll go with local for that.
If it's actually ACC Network, you might get some of the actual network folks. I know like Carol Bruggerman has been on color for some of the ACC Network televised games here at Ulmer. So I don't know. Maybe somebody like that.
And what a dynasty she's had in the calling and the coaching of softball. Gosh, she was with Sandy Pearsall for years.
And then, for anybody that doesn't know, she was associate head coach, I think, under Sandy Pearsall for a while.
Sure was.
And then she went, and I think she still is, associate executive, associate director of National Fast Pitch Coaches Association, which is here in Louisville. So, based here in Louisville. So
certainly, anyway. She's been very, very involved with all of that. We are happy to have her here, and such a nice lady to talk to also. I know sometimes she will, I haven't been up there this year, but in past years, she will pop into the softball press box occasionally and kind of just hang out and say hey and talk to people. Since she's, you know, she is based here in Louisville and everything else, so good to always see her and talk with her. And the Cards basically, it's never fun having to be the play-in game in a tournament, let's face it. And as Cardinal fans, we're not normally used to such, but it is the case the way it is in the ACC tournament that if you finish anywhere from 7th to 10th in softball, then you go into a 1-game play-in to make it to the round of 8 in the ACC softball tournament.
I think you mean lacrosse.
Lacrosse, I'm sorry, did I say softball?
Yeah. I don't think we're quite to softball yet, but yes, they're
we are not
the exact same.
Forget everything I said in terms to softball. I was meaning lacrosse. Okay.
Oh, and that's why I was talking about Carol Bergerman, because I heard you say softball.
Yeah, and
she wouldn't be with lacrosse.
She might. You never know.
Yeah. She's an. Oh, we're all screwed up here. All right.
Lacrosse was actually one goal away from becoming the 8 seed and hosting tomorrow. The Clemson Pitt match, had Clemson lost to Pitt, Louisville would have earned the 8 seed due to tiebreaker. Clemson Pitt had to go to overtime. So we needed Pitt to score one more goal in regulation or to score the only goal of overtime, which would have been nice, and then the Cards would host tomorrow. But that's why you don't want to leave your fate up to the results of other teams.
And it was a tough end of the year for Louisville and lacrosse, and we'll get into that in just a little bit here, as they unfortunately had to face some powerhouses to end the season. And Teeter gave it his best shot, and then they did. They really put in a very, very tough first half in a game that they probably had no reason being in. But we're there in halftime. And then all of a sudden in the second half, well, all of a sudden there was an explosion. And that explosion was Notre Dame telling them, thanks for playing. Good to see you. It's the second half now. We're going to kick your ass. Bye-bye. And that's what they did with it. Was it ended up? Jerry was a 23-10 or something like that, but this was like a 9-6 game at halftime.
Yeah, Cards were down 9-6 at the half.
Yeah.
And then Louisville scored two within the first couple minutes of the second half to cut it to 9-8. And you're thinking, okay, cool. Maybe they're going to kind of fire back here and give us a good game and maybe come back. And then out of nowhere, Notre Dame scores 9 straight. So not only did they just really blow it away there, but at that point, it's a running clock as well. Once you've got a 10-goal lead, clock keeps going. It was 23-9 up until about 2 seconds remaining in the match, and then Louisville scored kind of a goal, first career goal for, I think, Reese is who's knocked that one in. But just tough. I mean, when you're playing top 10 teams every single week, it feels like you're going to have those rough games because, I mean, that's both mentally and physically demanding on a team.
And it's kind of tough for Louisville in the aspect of where they didn't come out completely flat in the second half. They actually scored the first two goals here and had this thing at 9-8. And I'm watching it here at home on my laptop, and I'm like, okay, maybe we got something. And all of a sudden, it's like they shut the door and turned out the lights and locked it. So, no, this party is over. No one else can come in. Notre Dame is hosting. And, whoo, did they take off. Well, why was it important? Why does it matter? You're playing number 3 in the nation, yada, yada, yada. If the Cards had been able to win this thing, or if they had gotten just a little bit of help from Clemson, you know, they could have been the 7th seed. Which means they could have hosted Virginia Tech instead of having to go to Virginia Tech on Sunday. We had some players didn't do what they normally do. Kokoro Nakazawa, normally way up there in the scoring column, didn't have a big game.
She did get her 100th ever, but not her usual quantity of scoring, correct? All right.
A nice earmark there for her, and I guess we'll kind of have to wait and see whether she's going to actually be back next year or not, because I believe she will still have a COVID year available to her, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. So I don't know. I have not heard anything yet of if she is planning to return or what her future plans may be. But with Nagai being on the team next year, there's certainly a good chance that she wants to play with her sister for one more year.
Oh, absolutely. And her game is really just jumped up and said, pay attention to me once her sister got here.
And the way with her breaking 100 career goals this season and having 50-something, who knows? I mean, she comes back next year and could jump all the way up to 150-something career goals.
I mean, it's certainly available, and I'm sure Teeter would not say no. I'm sure he would say, oh, just keep the same locker. Yes, keep the same locker. But it was kind of sad just to see Notre Dame. And then they're the number 3 team in the nation, I know. They've got some talent on that team. And they had to cut across the crease and do that pass over the shoulder down to an arch. And Louisville just couldn't, God bless their souls, figure out how to stop it. But you could see it coming. I'm like, here comes that cutter. Be careful. Go, Irish. And, wow. Wish we could get a couple of girls that could learn how to do that. But anyway, so a tough loss, you know, and now you got to go to scenic Blacksburg and play against the Hokies. And if you win that one, well, you get Syracuse. How about that? But anyway, it's been a team that's looked really good at times, guys. This is it. I can see the improvement from last year with this lacrosse team. I really can.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm not saying that we're going to go down to to Virginia Tech and lose. I mean, you know, there's a possibility we could go down there and get the W. They did come up here and beat us. Yeah, they beat us earlier in the year, 14-10. But we've gotten a little bit better since then, I think. You know, and we were coming off we were coming off that loss to Lindenwood that had us all kind of scratching our heads, going like, top 25 power Lindenwood? No? Yeah. Who are these guys or gals? But we went over Pitt this year. Certainly. I think the one that really probably impressed a lot of us is we did beat Clemson. A nice win there. And it's a team that's getting better, but this, Jared, you got to take a look at what conference we're in.
Yeah, and that's part of being in the ACC is just about everybody is ranked in the top 25, and RPI-wise, they're all top 40 right now, other than, I think, Pitt, maybe. So I mean, it's just an extremely demanding schedule to play. And then when you set up your non-conference schedule to have ranked Denver, ranked Colorado, a Lindenwood team who just won the D2 championship a few years ago, it's not an easy schedule by any means. And you almost wonder if we didn't schedule some of these tough non-conference opponents that we lost to and you scheduled easy ones that you won, instead of being 7-10 right now, you could be 10-7 and potentially be in position to sneak in at large bid in the NCAA tournament.
I think if Teeter takes a look, kind of steps back and looks at this team at the end of the season and sees what he's done, what he's accomplished, what his strengths and weaknesses were, I think one of the main things that he's got to look on is finding some good defenders.
I fully agree. That's been the killer.
I mean, you know, there have been some games, which, yeah, we've been right in it till the end and then maybe lost at the last second. But, you know, the offense seems to be able to do enough production, I think, to win games. It's just, you know, making the stops. A good example is, you score 14 goals against Boston College, you turn around the next week, and you score 14 goals against Clemson. Boom and boom. The only difference being Boston College scored 17 to your 14 and beat you, and you were able to knock off Clemson by one, 14-13. And then the board, 11 goals against Liberty. Liberty, not a bad team this year either. So the production there, just you've got to be able to make the stops when you don't win the draw control and they're coming down to attack you. And if I saw it once on Notre Dame, they were just running down there as fast as they could, getting opportunities on our defense that wasn't reacting as fast as they should have and getting easy scores.
Yeah, there's no reason that as soon as you give up a draw control that the opposing team should be scoring in 10 to 15 seconds consistently. And that's exactly what happened, as you just mentioned, is Notre Dame would win that draw control. Full sprint down the field, our defense should have had time to get set already. They did not get set, and Notre Dame had an easy lane to drive and score.
And you can go back and watch the replay on it if you want to. They did that several times on us. And you got to be thinking to yourself, come on, can't somebody go back there and give the girl a hand back there and goalkeeper? Holy cow. But we'll see. Like we say, Virginia Tech, why not win? Why not win and get a shot at number one in the conference? We played Syracuse earlier this year. It was up there. They beat us by 10. Fully expected, I think, but on a neutral court. How do we do? How do we do with them on our new food?
Considerably later, more development of the team. You know, things change. It's not a given. The Syracuse win is not a given there. So, you know, that's why they go out and play the game, right?
Exactly. And you can take encouragement, I think, from the big win over Ohio State, where we just literally turned loose on them and had over 20 goals.
Yeah.
A very, very nice outing. gave Duke a battle down to the very end, 11-14, against a very good Duke team. And a little bit of a drop-off against Notre Dame, but time to bounce back for them. And I think Nakazawa's got to help lead that charge. Obviously, Peroni's going to be involved in that and leading that charge and getting them to a position where they can win this game. I think that some of the things that you got to kind of look at as well as with that is he's got some, I'm going to say three or four players, guys, that can come out and get this done for him. Maybe just a little more depth maybe in recruiting.
Yeah.
That's recruit. Yeah, go ahead, Jeff. Yeah. Yeah. It feels like this team is on the cusp of really being quite good. But maybe just not quite the depth. We've seen this team play with competitively with very good teams all season long until late in the game. And you start wondering if that's a depth issue, if that's maybe a conditioning issue. If you have a few more players that you can cycle in and out without losing a lot of quality, then you might be able to kind of keep up that pace better. That's what it feels like to me. I'm no expert, as I'll certainly say, but I kind of think I feel like a little bit more depth might really kind of put this team at the next level.
And I think that in addition to that, one of the things that Louisville was looking at as well is also they've had a little bit of injury bug hit them this year. Getting some players back in there might help them as well. Certainly, each year it gets a little better for lacrosse. And I think give Teeter enough time, he'll get this program where it needs to be. What we were talking about earlier, I think all these are going to be shown on the ACC network too. So if you haven't had a chance to catch any lacrosse action or very little lacrosse action this year, starting Sunday when you get two good games on Sunday, and then I think they come back and play again on Wednesday, the winners from Sunday advance to what they call the round of eight on Wednesday. And, of course, if Louisville wins, they would get Syracuse. Tough task, but doable. What else we got on lacrosse, guys?
Win tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And credit, I think, we talk about maybe the defense being a little lacking. I do want to credit our goalkeepers. We have two goalkeepers who have done a very good job, and Sarah Dash and Jay Pleck. When we say that, maybe we need to beef up the defense a little more, I don't think we're including goalkeepers in that. We may have to replace, but I think we're in pretty good shape where we are.
Yeah, I'll second that. I think Pluck and Adesh have done a great job. It's just kind of the defense that is in front of them a little bit.
Yeah, they need a little support. Yeah.
They could use a little boost, as they say. So we'll hope that that's one of the things that's on Teeter's shopping list as they get ready to end one season and get ready for an off season where he'll be doing some recruiting. Then, of course, we've got softball. We'll move on into that as the Cards went down to North Carolina and started their series last night. But it wasn't small ball. Jeff, what happened here?
Yeah, it was early. It was uncharacteristic of this team in a number of ways. It wasn't small ball. It was also early scoring for U of L. This is a team that tends to come back and score late in the game. First two innings and home run and home run. And that was the sum of the scoring for the whole game. We've talked about wanting to see a little more offense, and this is a case where we look at it and go, yeah, I'd like to see more offense. The win is good, but we certainly like to see a little more offense out of this team. So,
absolutely. Jared, the first one up there, Riley Frizzell. and said, yeah, I can hit this ball a long way to right field. Watch this. Put one out for a 1-0 lead. And then in the top of the second, the Cards still holding on to that 1-0 lead. They go to the plate then. Second time around, it was Matty Grant who stood up and said, yeah, it looks pretty good out there in right center, doesn't it? You know, if I give it a shot, oh, it worked. Home run. 2-0 Cards. Not a custom way for us to see us win, Jared. But certainly that combined with Zabala's pitching were the keys last night.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'll gladly take home runs any opportunity we can get them. And then whenever you've got Zabala in the circle, to me, you've always got a chance to win. Through a two-hitter, gave up a hit in the first inning, and then the other hit came in the seventh when North Carolina tried to rally and did put a run on the board. Not too much concern there. When she's hitting her corners, she's one of the best pitchers in the country. And, of course, the umpire needs to actually call a respectable strike zone and not go too tight is the other part of that. But, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if at some point in her career she throws a no-hitter at Louisville. I'd love to say she'd throw a perfect game, yeah, but defensive fielding is what concerns me. She could be having a perfect game going, and defensive fielding would ruin it for her. Is this the sad part of that? But just phenomenal pitcher. And then when you have players that are able to step up on offense and hit one out of the park like Riley Frizzell has done several times this year, Matty Grant coming in clutch a couple games now with some back-to-back homers and a couple games. I mean, that's what you need to see out of your offense. Now, we just need to get some runners on base and then hit the home runs. That offense will shoot up quite a bit. But, yeah, I mean, you did enough to get the job done, get the win against the North Carolina team who probably should have been favored over the Cards if there was any type of Vegas line, just looking at standings and results throughout the season. But another win or two this weekend should just about lock in the Cards for a guaranteed spot in the ACC tournament.
And when you take a look back at the start of the year here for softball, and I can remember we had the discussion, look at all the pitchers that are on the staff this year. As Holly, I think he had what, 7 players listed as either fully a pitcher or a pitcher in another position. But when you take a look on how it's kind of broke down and played out, it's been a whole lot of Zabala and really not much out of the others, although they've had, you know, some good things happen. Yeah. But this has been the Zabala show, hasn't it?
It mostly has been, and I don't think that's too much of a surprise. I mean, obviously throughout, you know, any sports season for any sports team, you're getting, you know, early in the season, you're figuring out who your personnel are, what they're capable of, and you kind of settle into a bit more of a routine as the season goes on. We see it with Jeff Walls in basketball, you know, all the time. He may go 10, 12 deep early in the season, but by the end of the season, he's down to maybe 8. You know, sometimes a little more than that, but, you know, you definitely shorten up that rotation a little bit. So nothing new here, you know, in the pitching roster. Yes, it definitely has been Zabala's show overall, but we do still see Brooke Gray. We do still see Sam Boo. You know, occasionally see Gabby Holloway popping in there, you know, but it's, they're not going to be contributing as much when you have really a really fantastic pitcher in Zabala. I think the only concern is when the other team's offense starts getting a little too familiar with their pitches, then you bring in somebody else for a different look.
That dreaded third time at bat, right?
Yeah, third or fourth, yeah.
Jared, you're out there for most of them, taking photos for us and catching up on the action. Your thoughts on Miss Zabala?
Well, I just think she's a great pitcher. If defense could you know, field a little better and offense could support her, she'd be a clear number one in the country in wins. I believe right now she's top 10, top 15 in the country in wins, which is still phenomenal. But it also kind of goes back to what Jeff was mentioning, is where you see a lot of Alyssa Zabala. And then we may see, as he mentioned, some of the other pitchers come in a little bit of relief here and there. I would like to see more involvement from some of the other pitchers, especially this late in the season. You hope that they've had some time to develop and get better. because you want to take some of that pressure off Zabala and you want to give her some rest here and there, because I think it was last weekend, maybe she just looked exhausted by the third game, but she had already pitched 10 or 11 innings before that, and then she pitched most of the game in that third one. And that's just a lot to ask for a pitcher to throw that much and go 100-plus pitches a game. But I enjoy watching her play. If somehow we could get her to hit the ball, she'd be our next, like, Taylor Robey or Marissa Becker type of player.
Shades of Megan Hensley, huh?
Yep. I would love it.
The Cards, of course, earlier in the week, did travel to Richmond, Kentucky, to take on the Eastern Kentucky University women's softball squad up there. I've never been to that facility. I've never seen a game up there, so I really can't speak to. Although I've been to, gosh, I've been to so many events up there, mostly basketball, but I've also seen a few others. But kind of a surprise here, gang, is EKU, who had been having a great season, although they didn't have a lot of division top five wins in their record, if any at all. Kind of put it to the Cards and freshman Brooke Gray early and knocked Louisville down for a 6-2 win on this one, Jared. What happened? They jumped on Louisville early and jumped on Brooke Gray.
Yeah, Eastern's just a really good team this year, and I know they haven't played any ranked opponents, but they had only lost three times going into the game, which is still difficult to do on any level, no matter who you're playing at the Division One softball. And maybe UVO didn't have their greatest outing, especially offensively, and Brooke Gray had some freshman growing pains, as we saw when EKU put up that six-run second inning. But a lot of that goes on to the offense, once again, just scoring two runs against Eastern Kentucky. It's another one, back-to-back games now, where offense has only managed two runs. Well, there's too many talented players on this team to be only able to score a couple runs a game. I mean, this is a team we should be seeing 6-7 runs a game consistently. So you want to see that kind of resolve itself here in the next couple weeks as the regular season winds down and conference play begins, or ACC tournament play begins.
And the Cards really didn't come on in this game until the latter part of the contest. Their first, what I'm going to consider, major scoring threat, which came in the sixth inning. They got the bases loaded. Just one out. Kylie Goff starting it out, beating out a little ground ball in the infield for a base hit. Daisy hits Hess, getting on right behind her with a slow throw on a fielder's choice. Chelsea Mack got a nice single to load the bases up for the Cards, and you're looking to one out. But the EKU pitcher that was on the mound and got the win and the complete game, Maddie Routon, who's 19-2, by the way, on the season, was able to quell the tide. Got a pop-up and got an unbelievable stop by their second baseman, Madison Scott. I don't know if you guys saw that or not. But, I mean, she just made a diving fielding stop that looked like he was going to go for at least a single to right center there. And she just got her glove out there and grabbed it in to end a Cards threat. But, you know, a case of where, as you all were talking about earlier, run production. It just wasn't there. How do you solve that, Jared? What do you do? Is there anything on our roster right now that we can bring in to up that?
Get back in the batting cage. That's your first thing, is look at swings. Are we dipping the shoulder too much, popping up? Are we just not seeing the ball come across the plate well? What's going on there? And then I think part of that is film study. Watch your pitchers wind up. Watch how the ball movement is on pitchers that you're going to be playing in upcoming games, just to be able to kind of anticipate what's going to happen. Does their rise ball go pretty high? Do they have a changeup that's got a lot of movement? Where's their fastball sit? Do they tend to go inside, outside? And then a lot of that is you need to do your own study and figure this out. Because I feel like we've had some batters maybe spend too much time with the bat on the shoulder at the plate, and you don't want to get behind the count early because you spend all your time battling back, and the pitcher's got a lot more freedom to do what they want to do with pitches to get you chasing stuff because you're protecting. I mean, there's not much in terms of coming off the bench to put players in. I think Matty Grant's had some strong at-bats, and Katie Thatcher's had some strong at-bats, but you just don't have a ton of reserves to go to. And part of that's also your short some players. Easton Lotus is out for the year. It's a 300 hitter. Ali Alexander's out for, I think, most of the season as well. It's a close to 300 hitter too. So you're hurting a little bit in that realm.
Yeah, the old Otis Lotus combination is no more. It's kind of sad. I used to love to call on that one. Here comes Otis, followed by Lotus. But the cards, they got a doubleheader today, and this is a weather-related, I think, doubleheader. They're worried about rain already Sunday in North Carolina. Okay, they must have some top-notch crack meteorologists down there in Wake Forest, in that area down through there, Chapel Hill. They predicted this on Friday. That, okay, we can't play Sunday. Let's just go ahead and do a doubleheader Saturday. I mean, I don't see it in the weatherscape. I mean, am I missing something here, guys? And I don't think we have ever at Louisville decided on a Friday not to play Saturday and move everything to Sunday, right?
Well, this is the opposite of that, but moving everything to today for Sunday. But, yeah, I mean, yeah. I learned not to question softball coaches and their weather calls. with Sandy Pearsall, they did one where they were like, hey, okay, it was a Saturday and it was going to be raining. And so they called it, they postponed it, and they said, we're going to get two in on Sunday between, such and such a time, so two different times. And I was looking at the weather forecast going, it's still saying the same chances of rain. And I actually got to talk to Coach Pearsall about it. She said, yeah. I said, but I looked at the forecast and realized there was going to be a gap in it. Like, she called the gap. It's like, all right, I'm impressed. So, softball coaches are like amateur meteorologists. So, they've learned, how this stuff works and understand it at a level that clearly I don't. So,
yeah, don't question softball coaches' minds when it comes to weather, because they're better than most weather people.
Yeah. They just had experience with it, and they look at the radar picture coming up and see where the gaps are,
Trying to take a little peek here and see what the Weather Channel was saying about this year. Yeah. They're actually predicting rain today and tomorrow, so let's hopefully they can get the games in today. We'll see, I guess.
I mean, if we built a dome or the stadium, we wouldn't have this problem.
I think there's also an aspect in which they said, hey, okay, there's chances of rain both days. Let's try to play the doubleheader today. If we can't get the full doubleheader again in today, then we have a chance of trying to get, one part of it or both tomorrow as well. Let's try and get ahead of the game instead of, chasing the weather after it. So maybe an element of that too.
Yeah, they're showing 95% chance of rain Sunday. Just looking at their deal here. So
yeah, it's always good to check with your facility staff too. The one you'll see out at Ulmer Stadium a lot with his bucket hat. His name's Rodney. Very knowledgeable. He's well experienced in terms of handling that softball field. So he can look at the weather and tell you, well, if it's going to rain this much, it's not going to be playable because of the spot in center field or the spot behind the plate, and just because you get so familiar with it. So always trust their expertise too.
Yeah. And you may see a 90% chance of rain for the day, but that may be, okay, it's going to rain until 10 o'clock, and then there's going to be a gap until 6 p.m., and then it's going to rain again, 90% chance of that rain occurring still leaves that gap where you could fit two softball games in.
as they were actually showing here. Yeah, dropping from 75 degrees down to 54 degrees on Sunday. Mm-hmm. With rain and a 95% chance of it. So it doesn't look too good. Maybe they made the right move here. We'll wait and see on that. Let's hope that it turns out well for them and that they can get a doubleheader in.
Yeah. And they're, they're trying to make the best choice they can for the situation. And, you know, hindsight's 20/20, but you know, you got to make the call ahead of time. You don't have the benefit of hindsight. So.
And so we won't question them. We'll go with their word. We'll see what happens. best of luck to them down there. And I did want to take maybe just a little bit of time so that we could get into some of these basketball things that are going on here and happening. It's always basketball season, and when you're in Louisville and Cards, their women's squad has picked up one of the best defensive guards in the ACC gang, Jalea Williams. Played for Miami. She has announced that she will be joining the Louisville squad for the 24-25 season. Played all 4 years or 3 years, starting for Katie Meyer. Averaged 7.1 points a game and 4.5 rebounds a game in 30 games last year. But her defense is where she hangs her shining star. This is a nice pickup for Louisville women's basketball, Jared.
Absolutely. Jeff Walls is priding himself on his team's always having a strong defense. Well, the concern going into last year's, where's the offense going to be? So he switched things up and recruited a bunch of scores. Then they couldn't play defense, and that's what killed Louisville's team last year, is they just couldn't play defense. He goes, all right, it's I'm going back.
Funny, because it's true.
it is. It's one of those sad things. Could you guard her? Could you guard her more than twice in a row?
Yes. So he's going back to his roots, and he's going to recruit a lot of freshmen and build them up. Some really strong freshmen coming in. He'll pull in a transfer, too, because I think when he only uses one or two transfers versus a lot, I think we see a lot more success. But he's pulling someone that can play defense. He goes, here's our defensive leader. We're going to look to them to see what they do and kind of captain the defense when we're down there. And you've got Nyla Harris and Olivia Cochran, who are both experienced in the post. And now they've got some help with guards, because you don't want to put either of them out there on guards. But when our guards were getting beat last year and you had to bring in help, they pulled out, and then the post would be wide open. So this will be a nice change of pace. Another experienced player who has been to it in the Elite Eight herself with Miami and Katie Meyer a couple years ago. Went and they beat Indiana at Indiana in that run, by the way. So I like the announcement of this commit, and I do understand that Lily Love saw the writing on the wall, said, okay, my playing time here is going to go down to maybe a minute or two a game. I just am surprised she waited this long to make that decision.
Yeah, you always kind of wondered, she's hanging on. Is there a reason? Does she see something, as Walls told her, something down the road that we don't know about? And that's why she's kind of still bearing with it despite the not great amounts of playing time. And I think it was not that. It was just a case of where Wall said, yeah, you're welcome to stay, but here's what I'm going to do. And boom, boom, boom. Here comes some very, very good players, either coming in via the transfer or either coming in, obviously, due to the freshman class. And that leads us, I guess, to let's go ahead and talk about Kiki very first, real quickly here. Kiki was drafted in the WNBA 2024 draft. A nice move for her. She was actually picked in the third round and going to Minnesota, which has been a popular place for Cardinals to have been drafted in past years. Went up there, of course, playing a year for us after 4 years of James Madison. I'm really tickled to see her get the shot, because at times, guys, she was really one of the one of the one or two out there that was fighting at 100%.
Absolutely. And she was one of the few that would show up and, you know, play a little bit of defense anyway. So, yeah, we've had several past Cardinals go to Minnesota, the Lynx, and, you know, we've struggled to have any of them make the playing roster. I think Jazz Jones did for a brief period of time, but if I remember correctly. But, you know, going in the third round, the chances of making that player roster by the time the season comes around is slim, right? She's got her work cut out for her. You know, possibility exists. And obviously it's an opportunity and it's an opening for her to prove herself and what she's capable of. You know, it's possible. It's you go in there and you, you know, step up your play and wow them. And, yeah, you may have an opportunity there.
Proud of her for what she was able to accomplish in her year here, and it paid off for her with a chance to get a shot at the big time. A couple of freshmen let's take a look at here for women's basketball that are coming in, and a couple girls I think that we're going to be hearing a lot about. I can say the name McKinley Randolph to you. I can say the name Arenas to you. NBA fans will think, hey, are those like the daughters of the... Yes, they are.
Yes, yes, indeed.
They are. That's Zach Randolph's little girl out there, and that's Gilberto Arenas' daughter out there coming to Louisville. And I'm trying to think, I don't think we've ever had two NBA dads send their daughters to Louisville at the same time, have we?
Not that I can recall.
I can't recall.
Basketball, maybe? Volleyball? I'm trying to think. But I don't think so even there. But, yeah, definitely not at basketball.
And so a great move for Jeff Walls. He's getting two players. One at 6 foot tall, maybe a smallish type forward. But certainly, as we've seen over the years in some of our opponents, you can have a 6 foot forward that can do a ton of damage to you if you don't guard her. The other, a very, very heady and quick guard. These girls played together. Jared, maybe you can fill this in a little bit for me. They were actually high school teammates, right?
I believe it was either high school or one of the AAU ball teams that they played together on.
And so we're looking forward to getting both of them on campus and getting them into what should be an interesting and a rather, I think, kind of large lineup. If you take a look at it, we've got, what, 13 or 14 girls now still on the lineup. And with who's coming back, this could be a team that has really got quite a bit of talent coming in on board. Not only new, but returning talent, Jeff.
Yeah, you know, obviously we talked about Olivia Cochran and Harris Mercer Russell have announced they're coming back. And, yeah, that's a great core right there. You know, a couple of really blue chip, hardworking players that have continued to develop and have continued to improve. So that's exciting to see. You know, Alexis Mobley has moved on, some others have moved on. But, you know, I think we've got a good core coming back to build around, and with the right additions, which is what it looks like we're seeing with some of the guards coming in, I think we're going to be in pretty good shape for a potential good year ahead, probably hopefully a better year ahead than what we had this past year even. So.
Yeah, and then kind of sad on Alexis Mobley. She had the injury, and she never really came back fully.
I felt like she was never 100% after that while she was here. And I don't know how much of that's true, but, you know, I think it has definitely set back her development as a player. So, which is unfortunate. I mean, she's a wonderful young woman, and she'll do well wherever she is. But, you know, it'll be, I don't know that she was going to reach her prime here at Louisville because of that.
Yeah, because I can remember interviewing her on Media Day and talking at length with her a little bit about the injury. She goes, but I'm going to come back from this, and I'm going to really turn out to be something. Go Cards. She was all fired up. Unfortunately, it didn't quite turn out the way she planned. But I think that there's a lot of talent that's coming in that's going to make this a good squad here. A squad that, I don't know, Walls has kind of shifted in gears again, hadn't he, here in his recruiting philosophies.
Yeah, I mean, he built all his success on recruiting freshmen and developing them over years to the point where in their junior seniors, they're great players with a lot of draft potential. And then when COVID hit and we saw the fifth-year eligibility and NIL, he said, all right, I'm going to try and follow suit with the transfer portal. And he struck gold early on with Emily Engstler. I think he was may have been a fool's gold situation where you're thinking, okay, every player I pull in the portal is going to be a top tier, lead me to a Final Four. And that unfortunately was not the case. We've had some really good transfers, but it doesn't always work out where they're as versatile and athletic as she was. And then you can't try and piece together a bunch of one and done type players real quick for the season and hope they're going to be able to gel in time for the season. And that's what happened.
Jeff Wall was very excited about Mac Randolph signing in and becoming a Card. Obviously, any time that you can get a player whose dad played in the NBA, she's kind of aware of what things are like on the next level.
Gives you kind of a mental and emotional advantage, I think, to having grown up around that sort of situation. It certainly is going to mentally prepare you for it a little bit more.
And Wall is just gushers about her. He's like, she's a tremendous leader on and off the court. She brings with her a championship mindset. Her energy is contagious, and her versatility will be showcased in our system. If you need a rebound, she'll get it. Need a bucket, she'll manufacture points. Wall is convinced that she will win the hearts of the Cardinal faithful with her hustle, toughness, and determination. She sounds like Jazz Jones reborn, doesn't she?
Yeah. I can deal with that one.
I could be happy with another Jazz Jones on campus. Absolutely so. And teaming her up with Azella Arenas. Also getting Taj Roberts, and one of the ones that I think may be eventually the cream of this recruiting crop. Taj Roberts is something else. If you've ever watched any clips on her, the way she plays and the energy that she shows, Cardinal fans, get ready, because she's going to be a fun one. Besides being a McDonald's All-American and obviously playing in the All-American game and everything else, she's going to be something that you're going to see out there that is not going to give up defensively. She plays just as hard on defense as she does on offense. And that's really what we've been looking for, guys.
Yeah, just I think it's a lot of great recruiting. Jeff Walls, Steph Norman have been strong recruiters for a long time. I wonder if he lets them go down the slide at the Keeper Center when they officially sign their papers.
Well, yeah, he closed it for a while, and that's why Haley transferred. She's like, I want to go to practice, coach. We'll go down the steps like everybody else. No, I want to use it. Well, anyway, yeah, she's ended up just as we're kind of randomly shooting here in the last minute or so before we get into final thoughts. How about the strange case of Miss Van Lith, who's decided that she wanted to stay in the school that had three initials?
Well, and others, like, you know, her choice to go there, and what was it? Haley Heck Cavender was set to go there, and then out of Kentucky, Cher, out of Kentucky, decided to go to TCU.
Yeah, and I saw then
Cavender was like, nah, maybe I'll go back to Miami.
So yeah. Someone had posted before Cavender changed her mind. I saw that there's something out there, and it said, TCU is going to be the all Instagram team. Because I have really large followings on social media, and I got a kick. And I don't blame Cavender for going back to Miami. Do you really want to, you know, there's a lot of big-time yeah. NIL Money Stars at one
place. And it's going to be her and her sister there again. So, you know.
Right. She talked her sister out of retirement to play at Miami, which I kind of figured. I said, there's no way one of them will keep playing and the other won't. So,
yeah.
So that's no surprise there. It's just interesting that they were willing to leave while Katie Meyer was there. And now that Katie Meyer's gone, that they're coming back.
Yeah.
Which I liked Katie Meyer as the head coach. So I don't think there was anything wrong there. So who knows?
Is Katie gone?
She's retired.
All right.
Did I miss that?
Apparently.
I'm almost, must have had, because it's news to me. Okay, well.
Yeah.
She retired. We've also landed on the moon, Paul.
Yeah. And I understand that World War II's over. When the hell did that happen? Well, Katie Meyer, obviously a very, very good coach for many, many years. She's one that'll probably do quite well in broadcasting, guys, just to give you an idea.
I suspect so, yeah.
Because
it's great basketball mind.
Yeah.
Just hearing her in post-game stuff at ACC tournaments and even kind of off the cuff talking with some of the, at that time, current ACC women's basketball announcers, they were like hand in glove. They just fell right in together perfectly, and she can ramble for a long time about anything and make sense doing it, which is very important. So, yeah, I think Katie may have just said, okay, yeah, go ahead and give me a microphone instead of a program. I'll coach instead of yell my players. Let me have that. I'll talk about my players instead of yelling about them.
She was one of the coaches that seemed to have better success against U of L.
She always did, was able to come in there and maybe throw an upset in the cards or give them a worrisome game all the way to the final buzzer. Just a very, very good coach, and certainly had a unfortunate situation down there in the fact that the University of Miami just wasn't a big basketball supporting school.
Yeah.
That was a football college. And I don't think they even started playing the game until, like, if I'm not mistaken, the mid to late 70s.